Everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me Q.
You know, just yesterday, I started a new video game called Beat Saber. Do you know that one?
I have seen demos of it. It's the one where you're kind of whacking around a lightsaber to a rhythm game, right?
That's right. Just kind of whacking it around. Yeah, it's all these blocks come at you and they're kind of mapped with the music. It feels impenetrable to watch a YouTube video of it happening.
Yes.
Like, it looks like it's all coming like way too fast and way too frequently. Too much to keep up with visually. But like when you're in the VR space, like that makes all the difference in the world. Like it, I don't know if it's the depth perception or just the immediacy of being there, but it just, you know, what looks impossible in 2D becomes incredibly possible in 3D and feels amazing.
Well, that's good because, yeah, I agree. When I saw gameplay of it, I was like, that looks like a version of Guitar Hero that I would not quite be able to handle.
I think you'd be able to handle this. Yeah, it's very, very easy to mod with custom songs that people have charted. It's a lot of fun, and they have oftentimes really clever ways of making you do the songs relevant dance moves as a part of the beat sabering.
Wow, this sounds like the complete opposite from the game that I just started, which is Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Yeah, Ghost Recon Wildlands. Why are you hopping into that one?
Well, why am I doing this to myself? Is what you're gonna have.
I mean, I'm sure it's a fine game in the way that a lot of Ubisoft games are fine games, but
yes,
I mean, you know, it wasn't super warmly received at the beginning. It had a little bit of a community build up after that, but I feel like that's kind of even died off by now.
Yeah, I, in a way, I'm fascinated with what Ubisoft has been doing with their games in terms of like, hey, we know it's not right from the beginning, but we're just going to stick with this darn thing and see where it takes us. In a way, I kind of respect it. It's a different way of looking at the stuff that you make. That I don't think a lot of developers are doing a super great job of, maybe outside of Blizzard at the moment. But also, yeah, it is like the opposite of a Playwright game, as everything is totally rote. Everything is completely, you know, baked. You know exactly how that game plays without ever having to play it. And yeah, it's been a strange experience so far, but not enjoyable.
No, but I mean, certainly you must have learned something from your experience so far.
Yes. So I have learned that politically slash message wise, like a lot of recent Ubisoft games, this game is totally screwed up. Like, you are, for all intents and purposes, the setup of the game is, hey, the cartel is bad. You're a team of American Special Forces soldiers. Get in there and kill whoever you want in the name of getting rid of the cartel. And it's just very, like, it's not that on the nose or that straightforward, but boy, oh boy, it certainly feels that way in execution.
Interesting.
I like the gadgets, though. Good drone. Good drone in that game.
Anyways, let's get into our own video games. We, of course, on this podcast, pitch our own video game ideas. We workshop them for 10 minutes and come up with something that we are truly proud of.
Cool. That's a bold claim.
All right. What do you have for us today, Q?
It's going to seem straightforward on the surface, but let's get into details because I think the devil's in the details of this pitch.
Okay. That was last week.
Today's pitch from me is the Pokemon MOBA. So let's take this 5v5 fairly rote thing that a lot of people have tried. Dota, League of Legends, Heroes of the Storm, and use it in the universe of Pokemon. So you can have maps that are based on the cities and locations of Pokemon. You could have each team is five or maybe six, if that feels more Pokemon, collection of Pokemon. Any Pokemon you choose gets two evolutions per match. So you have four moves like your little grid of four. But as you meet your XP requirements throughout a match, you know, Charmeleon, Charizard, that sort of thing. And every time you evolve, you get a new set of moves. So the game and the abilities are changing throughout the match as opposed to getting stronger constantly. Then finally, we throw in some pokiness to it by having a mechanic where if you can whittle down an enemy's health just far enough, you can throw a Pokeball and potentially capture that enemy. And I think we can discuss what the ramifications of that are, but some ideas are either that gives you like a damage bonus towards that opponent for a set period of time, or maybe that's how you capture and are able to play as other characters in the game. Like, eventually you have to fight one of every Pokemon and capture them in order to be able to play as those characters. So that's the pitch.
And we're starting the clock there. Let me start off with one thing I like and one thing that I have reservations about with the idea in its raw form. What I like is that I think we've all had those like fantasy thoughts in our mind when we're just thinking about, you know, Super Smash Bros. Or something. Like, what if this had, you know, 200 characters instead only 65? Like, what if there were so many characters that it was unfeasible to know them all? And there was that certain element of like unpredictability that you get with like your first couple days with the Smash Bros. Game, where you see Captain Olimar coming at you and you're like, oh man, what is this guy going to do? Like, what possibly could happen in a matchup between Captain Falcon and Captain Olimar? The battle of the captains.
We need Captain Toad in there.
That's right. Who's going to get crunchitized? You know, there are over 800 Pokemon at this point, I believe. If all of these Pokemon were truly playable and all had their own unique abilities, I mean, one, that would be a huge programming task. But I mean, two, it would be truly unpredictable in a way that not a lot of other games are, and it makes you really think on your feet, and it really makes high-level play dependent on knowledge rather than like being able to click a button faster. I think it would just be an interesting thing to experience and watch as well. And the one thing that I have reservations about at this point is that Pokemon is very structured around type advantages.
Yes.
And so I don't want every match to be decided before it even begins. And, you know, maybe there's a, maybe there's ways of mitigating this. Maybe, I'm not really sure if MOBA heroes have their own foils, the ones that they just absolutely don't want to run up against on the battlefield. You know, maybe if you are controlling, so many characters, then you would, have counters for everything. You'd have a balanced team. You wouldn't be able to represent all the types, just like in a regular game of Pokemon, so I like that. What are we going to do with this type advantage challenge? Does it have a kind of a corollary in MOBAs? I don't really play MOBAs.
A little bit. So one of the kinds of characters that have always fascinated me in MOBAs, and something that I don't feel like I've really seen a lot in other games, is a character type that MOBAs call an AD carry, which stands for attack damage person who needs to be carried, which is strange. So these are characters that usually early on in a match are supposed to be damage dealers, but they're so low level, the damage they're able to deal isn't very substantial. And because they're damage dealers, they're built to not have a lot of health. So for a large portion of the beginning phase of the game, they're relatively useless characters. I mean, they're still moving around the battlefield and accomplishing tasks for the team and maybe, you know, holding their own, but usually not without another person helping them out. What I think is interesting about a lot of Pokemon, you know, you could see their evolved forms and their early forms feeling a lot like these type of characters. It's almost a game of only that type of character. I think you're right. We need to focus it down because there's even a lot of different types of Pokemon. You know, maybe you go the Pokemon Go route and just start with the 151, or you only include characters of the sort of rock, paper, scissors type of fire, grass, water, and make those your core Pokemon people. Because I think like trying to represent all 800, you know, if you have 30 and all of them evolve twice, you're already dealing with a very, very large number.
Yeah, of, significant.
Yeah, significant number of things. So,
although whittling down the types, I feel like one of the interesting things about Pokemon for me as a person who's played every generation of Pokemon is there being more types than you can possibly represent in your party. And so I like covering all the bases that I can afford to cover and then having surprises like, oh, a bug type. I'm not really prepared for something like this. I'm going to have to do my best to improvise.
I think that's exactly right. And this is almost like if you have, there's something called a draft phase on a MOBA where you essentially see who the other team is picking and the other team can see who you're picking. And sometimes those come along with the other team or your team being able to say who the other team is not allowed to pick. Mm-hmm. And that is to say, like in a MOBA, you could pick all healers and really get your asses handed to you. And if that's the case, I think like a team should have the freedom of building their team wrong or unexpectedly, you know, as long as the game is kind of designed to handle that. Or balances for like, okay, a bunch of healers will never kill anybody, but you know, they're never going to die either. So I think that there's flexibility. Maybe you could do a slot of like, okay, you can't have two of the same types of Pokemon on a team. So you can't like stack fire. And if the other team stacks water, you know, it's just over before it starts.
At the same time, a lot of the gym leaders in the games stack types, and even up to the Elite Four, like they stack types, often having secondary types that kind of complement or counteract the normal foils to those types. And so, you know, they make it work for them. And I think I always really admire players who go into a match or who have a party that has some kind of a theme to it, whether it's an aesthetic theme or whether it's a type theme.
Yeah.
If somebody says like, I want to be a ghost type master, and they're able to also cover all their bases at the same time while leaving that huge vulnerability that all of their Pokemon are going to be weak to the same thing. Like, that's interesting. I admire that. And I think it's cool.
One of the things I thought could make this feel really dynamic in a way that some of the other MOBAs maybe sometimes feel a little rote is taking the idea of the tall grass and the random encounter and filling the map instead of just having these like inside lanes where you're kind of in the jungle or you're purposely hunting out bad guys that are pre-placed on the map, having tall grass and then randomly, you know, some Pokemon of, you know, variable strength can appear and you could find yourself either outmatched and in need of help, or potentially being able to get a really great experience advantage because you happen to match up well against the Pokemon that you found. And because each map can have different locations, you can really have maps where you're going to probably encounter water type and rock type, you know, all that sort of stuff. I think, you know, and each, of course, each side being a gym or a Poke Center, right, where when you transport back, you're healing and going into the PC and all of that stuff. I just feel like the aesthetic and even the sun and moon sort of perspective work really well for a MOBA.
Yeah, definitely. I think Viridian Forest is already pretty much laid out like a 3-lane battlegrounds anyways.
Yeah, and I like the idea of being able to pick characters that won't really evolve throughout a match. Like, you go and you pick a Snorlax, and you're locked into Snorlax. Like, the other team knows what they're up against, but maybe he's a little bit more of a force to be reckoned with as he continues to, like, level up and gain more health.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. I think, obviously, it's fun to see Pokemon actually perform their attacks. I think they've incorporated that into the mainline RPGs, but for so long, Pokemon was kind of a game of imagination where you just had these little sprites that would dance around a little bit and throw these very simple sprite effects at the other sprites on the other side. And so, you know, I feel like anyone who's been with Pokemon for long enough is still experiencing the joy and novelty of seeing Pokemon actually throwing their attacks and actually moving around. And you know, there's been some a really cool AR demo of Eevee and Pikachu running around by the Pokemon Go developers. And, you know, to me, like, that's still really cool because I'm so used to these things just being little pictures.
Yeah, they're such wonderful creatures, and I don't think we've seen them enough yet, even rendered in a what would anyone consider to be an extremely high fidelity. So I think the MOBA is a cool place to experiment with that and to say, hey, what, you know, just like most MOBAs, what happens when we release a Pikachu or release a, you know, Mewtwo into the wild, and how does that affect the game, and what does the meta become? And there's functions in there that are, can be like the shops, even where you're buying different Pokeballs or you're buying rare candies to give yourselves XP boosts and all that kind of stuff to make the game. I think it just translates well into that genre.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this a lot, having to choose one starter at the beginning of the match and then catching your opponents and then building up your army of Pokemon at your disposal, kind of going through the same arc, progression arc, as a regular Pokemon game, but just in this different format of real-time battles in that way.
Yeah, you could even make it so that instead of new characters being released, like, people could microtransact on, like, Pokeballs or whatever, a la Pokemon Go. Instead of releasing a new character and be like, hey, Mewtwo is now available in the shop, you say, hey, Mewtwo's on one of the maps and you have to encounter him randomly. And then if you're able to catch him, then he's kind of unlocked for you to play.
We're out of time. Do you have a name for this Pokemon MOBA?
Man, it's so easy to say Pokemoba. So that's what I'm tempted to go with, but I can't help but wonder if Pokemon wouldn't go for something a little bit more cutesy.
It could be like Dodemon Go. That doesn't really work.
Dodemon.
Yeah.
I mean, let's go for Pokemoba for now.
Pokemoba. Yeah. All right. That's
people will
that's
know exactly
fine.
What it is.
Pokemoba, the Pokemon MOBA subtitle. All right, let's get into my pitch for today. What I'm bringing is a party game, kind of like the Jackbox type games, with a live, interactive, spread across the world component as well. So what it is, there's a mix of party games that you play just with whoever is in the room with you. You know, you're all competing against one another. To determine, all these party games kind of end up in a somewhat of a percentage split, you know, whether you're, I don't know, filling sand between two containers or, you know, whatever you're doing in this virtual space, it's going to give you a split between two numbers, like 70-30, 50-50, 20-80, whatever. And so at this point, you have to ask a would you rather question that is then posed to the entire world, anyone who's playing this game via app or something. There would be a different experience that people would be able to just answer these would you rather questions on their own personal devices. And what you're looking for is to ask the perfect question that would result in the percentage split that you had happened upon in the previous, like, mini game round.
Yes.
So if you get 70-30, then you want to ask a question that returns 70% of people with one answer, 30% of people with another answer, and just be creative, do whatever you can do, and try to hit those numbers. So it's an MMO would you rather game. We'll start the clock there.
I love it. So I think that the satisfaction, so there's a game in the Jackbox, I'm sure that you're familiar with it, but one of the Jackbox games where they ask you to sort of guess a percentage, and like within certain brackets, if you're like 2% off, 1% off, 5% off, you get a different score for each one. I imagine the scoring here would work pretty similarly. Like if you come, you know,
yeah,
if it's
70-30
and you hit 25-65, you get X amount of points.
It's kind of inspired by an online game, just a browser game that I really like to play called GeoGuessr, where you're kind of plopped down anywhere in the world on a Google Street View, and you have to look around you and try to determine where you are and put a pin down on a world map. And the closer you are, the more points you get. The farther away you are, the fewer points you get for that guess. But so, it, you know, it's similar to that where you try to get close, and the better you are at coming close to that percentage, your par, then the more points you get.
That's really cool. And now, do you imagine it's just kind of numbers always going up, or maybe like there's a worldwide leaderboard, I imagine. And then if I get the percentage way off, can I lose points potentially?
Well, I think there's two components to this game. There's the worldwide component, which is answering questions. And we'll have to circle back to finding an interesting way to incentivize people to do this other than just the joy of answering personality questions. Like it could be, there's some fun in that, but I don't know if it's enough to keep, you know, a sizable percentage of people playing the game constantly. So there's that worldwide component, but then the part of the game where you're actually asking the questions is a couch multiplayer game with just whoever you have around you. And so the competition, you know, whether you get more points or fewer points is just between whoever's in the room with you playing this party game.
Okay. So now I'm trying to think of like, what's an example of a question? Because one of the things that I loved about Splatoon was their sort of ketchup versus mayo, but like that did not go the way that I thought it would have at all. Like so many more people seem to like mayo over ketchup or whatever.
I think that's the interesting thing is that the closer you get to a 100-0 split, the easier it's going to be. I mean, if you had 100-0, then you could just ask like, who would you rather make out with, Scarlett Johansson or Hitler? And it's like, okay, great. I can pretty accurately determine that this is going to be a 100-0 split.
Right, exactly.
As you start to get towards 50-50, you need to start thinking like, okay, what's something that's going to be so divisive that half the people are going to agree and half the people aren't? And the Microsoft reward system that they reward you for using Bing because, you know, it's not Google, so they have to kind of give you some external motivation to do it. Every Friday, they have a poll. Maybe it's not Fridays, but, you know, with whatever frequency, they have a poll between two options. And it's always kind of interesting to see, okay, you know, 70% of people prefer ice cream to 30% people preferring frozen yogurt and that kind of thing. So, you know, there are those, there are definitely those questions out there. And it's all about kind of understanding this group psychology, almost like a Family Feud type of setup.
Yeah. So now it's a matter to me of like, how to create the loop. It's like maybe I have to answer three questions for every question like that I'm posed, because you want the sort of the ratio to be such that everybody's question is going to get like a sufficient number of answers. Maybe you also like you gain the ability. The only way you can post a question is to like get credits by answering another question, perhaps.
I want this to be kind of two separate experiences. There's the party game and then there's the MMO worldwide game of answering questions. And so I don't like the last thing that I want is for somebody to be in a party to for it to circle around to their turn and they realize they can't ask any more questions, because that would just kind of grind the whole party to a stop. It'd be one of those record scratch everybody looks at the embarrassed person moments.
Yeah,
right. In movies.
Sure.
Instead of punishing people who don't answer enough questions, it would be better to find ways to incentivize people to answer questions. I mean, if this was like the most popular game in the world, then you could just use, you know, captcha responses are now answers to this question. It would pose you a question that you would have to answer appropriately instead of having to identify how many squares of this picture have an automobile in it or something.
Right.
But there's other ways to do it. Like if you were to build like a intrinsically fun app, maybe one of those like cat collecting games or something like that, that gives you, that incentivizes you to answer questions, because, you know, it is fun to answer questions, theoretically. And there's a lot of people who will do it with very little provocation, like you saw from the Wii Vote channel on the Nintendo Wii back in the day.
Yeah, I was just thinking that a lot of people will do it, especially if you just provide the very simple incentive of, hey, go and like you get to see the results if you participate. So like the fact that after you answer, you get to see, holy cow, like, you know, another 50% of people thought the other thing. That seems crazy to me.
Yeah. And you can have badges for the number of questions you've answered. And I don't want to give people like badges for answering a certain number of them correctly or with the most popular answer, because then it would probably lead people to not answer honestly. But, mm-hmm. you know, if there are ways to make that experience more interesting, then I'm definitely for that.
If you find a way to take it and make it a social experience where I can have that round just within my friends, like connect a bunch of phones and everybody answer at the same time, and then we all get to see the results together, especially like on a screen or something,
yeah,
then I think you're really onto something.
If you had 10 people, or I guess 11 people, one to ask the question, then 10 to answer,
yeah,
then that would be you could do a very nice controlled closed system. I think that it being an MMO that is worldwide, like, has an appeal, because there's like, it still feels like a little bit magic that you can just throw a question out there and then 5 minutes, or I don't know, that feels like a long time, 1 minute later, get back like 500,000 answers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, theoretically, it's possible. And to turn the family game night into something that, to some extent, you know, hundreds or thousands of people are participating in is kind of cool.
I can feel someone training a banned words list as we speak.
Yeah, you'd have to... You'd have to really define your audience on this one. If it was a very naughty game, then there's definitely an audience for that. And I think that would encourage a lot of people to participate where they might not otherwise. If it was really heavily moderated, then I can see a lot of people losing interest.
The thing that's magical about this is, and maybe this is, I hate to get all cheesy about it, but it's interesting to see all the ways that we're alike these days in what feels like an increasing number of ways that we're different.
Those surprising moments are kind of fun as well. When you throw a question out there expecting one set of responses. Okay, here's something. If you have to get a 70-30 split, do you have to like bet on which answer is going to be the 70? Because I feel like it makes it a little easy if you expect it to be one. It's almost like in pool, sometimes you have to call your shot, like which pocket it's going to go into, because if you hit it hard enough, it's eventually going to fall into a pocket. But, you know, truly skilled players will be able to align perfectly. So
maybe the first thing after you write your question, let's go like Mario Maker style and make you beat your level, right? So you answer your question, but maybe it's like you get this question to be 70-30 and you get bonus points if you're in the minority.
Okay.
So like not only are you trying to phrase a question, but you're trying to phrase a question that like you think other people won't necessarily, or the majority of other people won't necessarily relate to based on the ratio. Or they say pick the popular one, what you think is popular. But I think what's interesting about that is if you make the person focus on what they think makes them different from anyone, and then find out, hey, there's actually like, in that case, you almost can't lose, right? Because if you are in the minority, hey, bonus points. And if you're not in the minority, whoa, oh my God, all the other people like anime too. Like, that's great.
I think there are certain scenarios, especially when you're dealing with those kind of 100-0 types of questions, that it would be very easy to determine which one's going to be the minority. But I think maybe like round one, you get points just regardless of which way the 70-30 falls. Round two, you have to call it to like make it a little bit harder. Anyways, we've talked a lot about this game. We have to wrap up our discussion on that one. And now I have to come up with a name for it. So this is kind of like a 1 versus 100 game. You remember that on Xbox Live?
This could be 1 versus 1,000,000.
You could call it. Okay. It's not a great name, but it has the feeling of something that you would bust out on like a board game night. So I'm just going to call it Split the Difference.
I was going to say the same thing. That's amazing. That's awesome.
I love it. All right. It's meant to be then. I guess we've been podcasting together for so long.
Yeah, we're in simpatico. The score screen's going to be a little flag right wherever that percentage is, and then your little bar, however close it comes.
Yeah. All right, this is great. Okay, since we are so disgustingly in sync. Let's bring in a third party. This is a community submission. Again, we're still pretty low on these, so if you want to submit something, then please do that now. We will read it on a very soon upcoming episode.
Yeah.
This comes from Thomas Eif, who says, essentially the mechanics of Don't Nod's vampire. I say vampire. I've heard it pronounced that way.
I think it's vampire.
Well, that's the thing is that vampire is, we have a word for that already. So if we're going to spell it with a Y, I pronounce it vampire because that's how Van Helsing, played by Anthony Hopkins, said it in Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is one of my favorite movies.
Very nice.
Pronouncing it off of a book called Vampire spelled that way. So I have that association and I figure if they're going to spell it differently, might as well give them the benefit of the doubt and say it differently too.
Why not?
Yeah, I'm not going to hold anyone's feet to the fire. This isn't the hill I'm going to die on. Anyways, essentially the mechanics of Don't Nod Vampire. Only you play as a shape-shifting mudman, and you have to use your powers and manipulations to lure victims into your swamp. Starting the clock, I'm really glad that I'm super familiar with the mechanics of vampire.
are you really, or are you just saying that?
I'm being sorry. Okay, so I know a little bit about it. I've watched reviews. From what I understand, and I hope I'm thinking of the right game here. Mm-hmm. It kind of plays like a regular beat 'em up action game, but there's a lot of RPG elements. You can walk around the world and any NPC can be killed and devoured. And as you eat or suck the blood from other NPCs, that makes you more powerful, but it kills them, and there are going to be like social and story repercussions for them being dead. So you always have to balance the possibility that you're locking yourself out of story and social potential with the benefit of being more powerful in these combat encounters.
Talk about being in simpatico. That's basically what I know of vampire. I will humor you on this vampire journey. My whole thing about this is, like, in a way, I read this email and I started thinking, this sounds like Clayface from the Batman villain. Are you familiar?
Exactly.
So I selfishly, if we're here to make this thing sell, let's make it a Gotham game, you know, and let's make you Clayface. And some of the favorite things that I loved about Clayface, at least in the Batman animated series, was he was kind of what, like a silver screen actor at some point. And so he could not only kind of transform his body into, once he became Clayface, he could transform his body into very sort of large stones and rocks and very, you know, super villainy stuff. But like, he could also, for at least some temporary amount of time, shapeshift into looking like a pretty normal person.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the idea of maybe potentially the victims that you add to your repertoire, you're able to take their form even and use that to gain access to new areas. So it's like a sort of Gotham detective-y feel, but you're also playing almost Hitman in the middle of it.
Yeah, this is interesting. You know, just today, I've been for the last several years a judge on the Seattle Indies Expo panel. This is a panel of judges who review the incoming games that are submitted to the expo and determine like which ones are going to be featured on the show floor, because we have limited space and we want to kind of feature the most interesting and promising games. And so, I'm always going through these really weird, oftentimes early builds of interesting ideas coming from usually local Seattleite game developers. And there's one that I played today, and I don't want to drop its name because it's still pre-alpha, and I don't want to give too much detail away because I really don't want to like blow up somebody's spot. You know, I guess they're submitting to a public exhibition, so they intend for it to be seen. But just in case this is something that, you know, is, you know, I don't want somebody else beating somebody to the punch. Because they, right. Anyways, it's an interesting, like a social simulation almost of there's these NPCs that all exist in this open space, and they each have their own little stories, and whatever you do to any of them, like, they have a certain memory, they can witness other events that will color the way that they think of you, and, you know, they'll spread stories about you, and it's like an interesting, like a balancing act, a social balancing act that you have to perform to keep everyone happy with you, to break up fights without arousing suspicion, to not steal from anybody because other people might witness you stealing. And, you know, it's just, it's not super complex at this point, but there is an interesting domino effect, almost like the nemesis system in the Shadow of Mordor games.
Yeah.
What if this was almost like an Animal Crossing where you're in a little village of villagers or a city, you know, whatever it is, and you can basically abduct and take over the roles of people, just like Prototype, another superhero type game. You can take over the roles of other people and kind of experience life through their eyes. And ultimately your goal is to take everybody, kind of like The Thing. Yeah, that's another good like reference point. The Thing, the John Carpenter movie. So you're playing this monster trying to clear the town without anybody catching on to the fact that you're slowly replacing all their loved ones.
Yeah, I like the idea of trying to maintain society for as like long as possible.
Yeah.
While you kind of wreak havoc at the same time. It's like wreaking the most quiet havoc possible. And maybe that ends up feeling like, yeah, I don't know. By saying that it's this Animal Crossing thing, is it almost like run-based to you? Do you like continue to try and pass through the town until you can literally be one of like three people left that no one is like worried about where everyone is?
I guess your goal would be to clear the town, almost like a game of Mafia, like that card game, or Spy Party, that game that's been perpetually in development for like the past 12 years.
Yes.
Where one player is a sniper and one player is a party goer trying to imitate NPC behavior. So maybe if this was a multiplayer game, then it could be kind of like Mafia, where everybody is playing their own part, trying to figure out who else is a human and who is an NPC, but you can walk around the city, you can interact in very simple ways, you can try to suss out weird behavior. And, you know, this could be a VR game, it could be a first person on screen game. There's a lot of ways to make this interesting.
Yeah, I think what's really cool about the idea of playing is maybe similar to Clayface, there has to be something that like helps you maintain your cover. Maybe you do need to have a steady stream of victims or something that kind of allow you to continue to propagate the lie, because you kind of want to feel like if you push yourself or overextend yourself too far, that the whole thing is going to come like crashing down on you.
Right. And then just like in Mafia, when you get down to just like two or three people left, then, you know, at least some of the eyes are going to be pointed towards you.
Right.
And so finding ways to cast suspicion on other people, maybe if you plant evidence near NPCs or force them into behaviors that seem unnatural for NPCs, then you can kind of like cast some shade on them and clear suspicion from you potentially.
Yeah, maybe like you can this is a gross word, but kind of like fleck yourself or scraps of clay or grossness onto NPCs such that they look like they might be having one of your tells, and therefore are convincing for some number of reasons.
This would be interesting if there were like 8 players in a round and 16 NPCs, and so you do have the sense that anybody that you run across might be another player, but you kind of want to, on one hand, disguise your identity, even if you are just a regular villager, not the monster. On the other hand, you might want to flag that you're a human to try to, gain the trust of other fellow humans. So yeah, I don't know. This could be an interesting like man versus machine kind of Turing test type game.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think that this thing is ripe for that sort of social play, right? Where one person is trying to constantly guess as to what's going on. But at the same time, like, say it's a single player game, I think that it's also cool to, I mean, like a Vampyr, have this sort of the world gets more and more difficult the more victims you claim, right? Because the more people become paranoid and suspicious and alerted, or maybe even like break their routines, right? Like, there's a way to kind of have a Hitman level, if you play it badly enough, like me, fall apart on you in a way that seems almost unsalvageable. And maybe this game is about reaching those points and then managing it from there.
All right, well, we're out of time. We have to come up with a name. Thomas does not provide a name, but in the recent reintroduction of an old familiar trend, I noticed that we're getting a few more licensed games now. There was a Hotel Transylvania 3 game coming out for all modern consoles soon. And that's the kind of thing that we haven't seen since like the days of the Wii, Xbox, 360, PS3 generation.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if I'm ready for it.
Well, we'll see. But anyways, I think an appropriate name for this and a tie-in to a beloved movie is Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Sure. I love it.
As a horror title, of course.
And you start with a cardigan that you take off. You come in, you swap your jacket and shoes, and then start devouring people's
souls. Take off your skin suit.
Okay, perfect.
All right. Anyways, let's wrap up the show. That was a community submission. If you have something to submit, and we hope that you do at this point, because again, we're running a little bit low right now, then you can submit that to playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us directly at playwrightcast. That is PLAYWRITECAST.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World. It's off the album Blue Noise. And hey, if you are an Overcast listener and this is your first episode, this is just a personal welcome from Q and H here. Welcome on board. We hope that you enjoyed the show.
Of course, yes. And there's plenty of back catalog if you like what we do. If you don't like what we do, there's plenty of back catalog that you can feel that much more good yes. about skipping.
Oh, I was going to say, you should go and hate listen to the rest of the
show. Oh, yeah,
show.
Please. Those are all numbers, means. Too.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
No, really. I mean, we do appreciate community contributions from any and everyone who chooses to listen to the podcast at all. It gives us a greater diversity of ideas to talk about and
totally.
Draws from different sets of experiences and just ends up making it a better show for everyone, really.
Yeah, and you've said it well, and I'll say it, like, if you haven't, you know, again, if this is your first episode, don't be intimidated. You don't have to write into the show, but writing into us can be as simple as tweeting at PlayerICast, or you can go to PlayerICast.com, and there's a thing right on the homepage. You can just say, hey, what if Metal Gear mashed up with Pokemon? And, you know, that's the game, and we take it from there. So, yeah, it can be small or big. I think all of us that play video games or just love watching them have had, you know, an idea or at least a way to change up one of our favorite games that we'd always love to see made.
That's right. We've had multi-paragraph pitches sent at us. We've also had just a simple stick figure drawing.
Yeah, and an entire saga based around him.
Feel free. You know, don't feel like any idea is too small. And also don't feel like any idea is too big. We're not going to read a book on the air, but, you know, we will summarize
it. We'll read passages from a book on the air.
That's true. We have done that.
Speaking of which, I know we're running long and we have to go, but Thomas Eif, I'm eyeballing you for a nickname. Don't think you're getting out of it. Super Saunders may be squared away. Super Saunder and Saunders thinks he's gotten away with not being sauntering anymore, but maybe Happy Eif, Happy Life or something like that is coming your way. I don't know. We'll,
good. Eif H cereal. Have to, I have to be really Eif certain cereal. That's the pronunciation.
I know. It'll be Ife or something.
Yeah. Eif. Thomas Eve, that has a nice, that's a sexy way to pronounce that name. Eve? That's what I would choose if I was like, if this was my Ellis Island choice.
I'm going to call him Eve Skimon if that's.
Or Eve Three Deadly Shadows.
Oh, beautiful. Awesome.
Anyways, that's enough playwright for today. Q, why don't you take us out with a miniature pitch?
Here's something that deserves to come back, and maybe in this form, Twisted Metal Royale.
I think we've actually done that before.
Oh, no. Have we?
Have we? Gosh, that sounds very familiar, but let's put it out there. I like it. It's so good. We might have accidentally done it twice. Maybe. Maybe not.
Sorry.
Maybe I'm going crazy. If we have done that before, please tweet us the name of the game. That's a fun little listener activity. Right. Anyways, that's enough for today. We'll see you next week.
Bye.